Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the matrix.
And you have officially moved into the matrix, or out of the matrix. I've been doing that all day. I don't know why. I've been saying things backwards. It's because I don't know what the deal is, Jerry. Sometimes it's me. Am I getting old? Is that what it is? Why are you so silent?
I think the answer, well, look, you're a relatively
young
man.
You're old enough to be my father. You realize that?
Yeah, I know, but I'm in pretty good shape for my age.
Oh, okay. You are in very good shape for your age.
Yes. So, mentally and physically.
Yeah, okay, no, you so are. No, let's just talk about you. Let's go on to the show. By the way, we have a really interesting show for our guest today. Jerry and I, we've often talked about different types of warfare. We talked about asymmetrical warfare. We've talked about hybrid warfare. But today, do we not have a real humdinger here? And it's called hydro warfare in...
Hydra
warfare. Yeah, hydra warfare in Gaza. The real truth. You've got to listen to this program because we have a very exciting guest that we have on, and his name is
Dan Diker.
Dan Diker. He's a very, very well-informed man who lives in Israel, has amazing connections, and you're just going to love the interview. Do you have anything to say before we go to the break?
Yes, for all you fans of Captain America, you will realize the character portrayed as the Red Skull is head of Hydra.
Is head of Hydra, right. So you're going to find out what Hydra warfare is all about. And then once you figure out, you'll understand the complexity behind how do you fight an enemy that continues to shift like a shadow. So, only the shadow knows. But that really ages you and I when I said that. Anyway, we're going to go to a break. Don't go away. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. And our official sponsor is TorahLearningChannel.com, TorahLearningChannel.com. We'll see you right after these very, very important messages.
John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind,
every Thursday.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And we really appreciate you sticking around for the first part of Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. We are sponsored by TorahLearningChannel.com, TorahLearningChannel.com. It's your place 24/7, Torah Learning, and that is the best English Torah teachers in the world on one streaming service, TorahLearningChannel.com. Okay, Dan, we have a great guest. Jerry, by the name of Dan. I'm just
Diker.
Really tongue-tied. Dan Diker, I'm just totally tongue-tied today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce the guest, and let's get right into this.
Dan Diker is a senior fellow at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. He's director of the Political Warfare Project, which is important for this discussion. He is the former Secretary General of the World Jewish Congress. He's also been a friend of long standing, and he's a Harvardian. We won't hold that against him.
Yeah, actually, that's actually, these days, that's actually a very true statement. Don't hold it against me. Harvard is having difficulty with any kind of single-sex club or institution as opposed to what was 30 years ago.
Correct. So, Dan, we had the embassy opening yesterday, which looked like a major historical event. Enormous crowd, both of Israeli leaders and members of the Trump administration, congressional delegations, and others. Very moving ceremony. So the question is, why is it such a historic event?
Well, yesterday, the move of the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem was something that came some 70 years late, but as they say, better late than never. This was a recognition finally after the third restoration of the Jewish Commonwealth, the Jewish Republic, Israel, that the world's major power and the major power in the free world recognize what Jews have known for the last 3,600 years, which is that Israel is synonymous with Jerusalem. And Jerusalem represents the roots, the history, the present, and the future of the Jewish people. So it's Israel in a microcosm, and the problem had been that it had gone unrecognized internationally while Israel was the only country in the UN system who had named its capital, and its capital went unrecognized because of a, in the modern period, a 100-year war by Israel's neighbors to extinguish the Jewish state, and they knew that if they would reject Israel and they would reject Jerusalem simultaneously, well, then Israel had no value if they rejected Jerusalem. So Jerusalem became, from the very beginning, a great political and religious football, and the Muslim world would not hear of Israel's capital, Jerusalem. And in fact, Western powers, in order to appear to be objective as they became negotiators and mediators starting in the 1970s, they kept Jerusalem very much in abeyance. Nonetheless, since 1995, the American people, through their elected representatives in Congress, decided that the American embassy should move to Jerusalem. And then there were 20 years or 22 years of waivers exercised by presidents beginning in 1995 with President Clinton. And that finally has ended, so that the final recognition by the world's great power that the Jewish people have finally been recognized in their historic and eternal capital, Jerusalem. It's a very important day in world history and in Jewish history.
So I understand that the site where the U.S. Embassy, this is Rod, by the way, Dan, appreciate you coming on. The U.S.
Sure,
embassy,
thank you, Rod.
The site where the U.S. Embassy is going to be built is pretty significant. Can you talk about the history and what is the significance of the message that it should send to the world?
Well, actually, President Trump, acting in classic real estate entrepreneurial style, decided to avoid incurring a $1 billion+ cost and probably 4 to 5 years of waiting time. And God knows in politics where President Trump would be over the next 4 to 5 years anyway. And he basically refaced a very handsome building, which is the American consulate in Jerusalem on David Flusser Street, mm-hmm. in the Arnona neighborhood, towards the eastern boundary of Jerusalem, which until 1967 was actually in what then was the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, and today is part of the integrated new boundaries of the city of Jerusalem. And it's very, very significant for a number of reasons. One, it sends a signal to the free world as well as to the Middle East, that America acts, doesn't only talk, and that its action and its recognition of Israeli sovereignty through its capital city is a stabilizing factor for the region and will actually lead, in my estimation, to much better relations with Israel's neighbors and even the Palestinians, as opposed to keeping Israel's capital in abeyance above the heads of Israelis who would never split its own capital city. So I think that President Trump has taken a great move towards peace. It's counterintuitive what I'm saying, because now the Israelis, the Jewish state, the Israeli public, Christians, Jews, and Muslims all would be ready to make compromises on other issues in negotiations with Palestinian and neighbors, what they would not be prepared to do on Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is a red line for Israel.
Dan, the embassy opening was overshadowed by roiling violent protests by Hamas on Israel's southern frontier, Gaza, on the 70th anniversary of the founding of the State of Israel, what they call al-Nakba, the catastrophe. What drove Hamas in desperation to conduct these protests? Who funded it? And why did Hamas sabotage Israel's humanitarian aid?
Well, you know, Jerry, what is happening in Gaza right now, as we speak, which is Nakba Day, the day of the catastrophe, which is the 15th of May, a full 6 weeks from the first weekly protest that Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood affiliates in Europe have financed and organized, is one of the most misunderstood and overly covered by the Western media event that we've seen in recent times, certainly in a conflict zone. And I want to share with you what I shared in a private audience earlier today in Jerusalem, which is that most people don't know that there are really six or seven different battles and motivations at play right here. Number one, if you notice some of the news reporting that is going on inside Gaza when they ask young people why it is that they are so-called protesting or demonstrating, they talk about economics. They talk about the fact that 44-45% of Gaza working-age Gazans are unemployed. They talk about the difficulties in getting credit in what they call financing their monthly their lives month by month. And that is really another way of saying they're furious with the Palestinian Authority that had cut electricity supplies to Gaza, and that is conducting a civil war essentially against their Gaza adversaries, and that in fact this economic problem is directly connected to the Palestinian Authority that is not cooperating with Gaza, because they in the West Bank and Gazans in the Hamas in Gaza are competing for the Palestinian street. And the problem with economics has nothing to do with the third reason that some people will state, which is the Hamas leadership, which is this thing called the Great Return March, the 70 symbol, which essentially is a denial of the existence of the State of Israel. And many, unfortunately, in the international media are not recognizing that fact. What does these protests have to do with the peace process and the prospects for a peaceful outcome of negotiations between Israel and the Palestinian Authority? Well, it has nothing to do with it. All the Hamas leadership is claiming is that Israel is illegitimate, shouldn't exist, and the Palestinians want to actually so-called return to lands from which they fled in 1948, during what almost was a massacre of 500,000 Jews in their fledgling state following UN recognition of Israel. But the real reason, and to wrap this up, is that Hamas has basically called for thousands upon thousands of its young people to storm the fence at any price, being well compensated for it, and to kill and kidnap Israelis on the other side of the fence. And that has been completely underreported by the international media, meaning that the Gazans, between 10 and 40,000, depending on which week you're looking at, are being incited and are being compensated to storm the fence with light weapons and try to kidnap and kill as many women and children as possible.
Dan,
and that is why...
Dan, we're going to have to take a hard break. So keep that thought right there, because I want to pick that back up. I also would like to open up with this idea of how well do you think the IDF's graduated response to controlling a mass protest on the southern border, is it really working, and is there some modifications going to need to take place? So you're listening to Beyond the Matrix. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these very important messages.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And back from the break, you're listening to Beyond the Matrix. I'm Rod Bryant, and you are listening to Beyond the Matrix on Israel News Talk Radio. We are with Dan Diker, and we've been talking about the episode that has been going on since the embassy inauguration with the Hamas-driven protest at the southern border. Dan, why don't you go ahead and pick it up? In the break, you had mentioned the fact that these people, about 40,000, and 50 people are shot to death, well beyond plenty of warning from Israel itself. Can you go ahead and pick that up and explain that?
Rod, these are completely preventable injuries and deaths. The Hamas is compensating these many young people, teenagers even, to storm an international border and attempt to kidnap and maim and kill Israelis, women and children. There are several Israeli communities, Jewish communities, 400 and 500 meters, less than half a kilometer away from that border, so that the Israeli Defense Forces are very frightened that if the if attempts succeed to breach the fence, hundreds, if not thousands of people could get through the fence, then you will have a major strategic security problem for Israel, as these people try to ignite fields, which they have done before, through fire kites, through light weapons, IEDs, and other weaponry, which are not being reported by the mainstream media, unfortunately, including the American networks. And that is what is causing death and injury to Palestinians. If they would stay away from the fence, they would not be injured. And the fact is that there are children that are being issued by burning tires that they ignited, as well as tear gas, is an absolute violation of human rights law from their side, from Hamas. Hamas is violating international law and human rights law moment after moment after moment, because they're encouraging youngsters almost in a festival atmosphere, to breach the fence and kill Israelis. And that is not going to happen. So if they stay away from the fence, as any country in a civilized world would do, they will not get hurt.
Dan, there was a conflagration, a torching of the Keren Shalom crossing into Gaza that began on Friday.
Yeah, and explain, Jerry, explain what that is so that the listener will know.
Well, the Keren Shalom... Actually, I'll turn it over to Dan to explain how significant that was, an action by Hamas against the only portal for delivery of humanitarian aid.
Right. So Keren Shalom is the main portal, as you say, Jerry, for commerce delivery as well. I just was down at the Keren Shalom crossings about a month ago, and I actually personally witnessed hundreds of trucks going from Israel into Hamas-controlled Gaza in order to assist the public with in Gaza through. I saw cement trucks going through, food trucks going through, and other raw materials. Now, the problem here that Jerry raised is that what the Hamas did is basically try to commit economic suicide the other day by actually burning gas, oil and gas infrastructure on the Gaza side. And the question is, well, why would they want to do that? And it is my assessment that that is because the Palestinian Authority, under the control of the Fatah in Judea and Samaria, in Ramallah, they reap the profits from the passage of a lot of those oil and gas deliveries. They don't go directly to the Hamas pockets. They go into Fatah pockets. My understanding is that the Hamas is interested, wanted to destroy them so they could rebuild them, negotiating directly with Israel, and that they would then be the owners on their side, if you will, of that infrastructure, that utility and that infrastructure, and reap the profits themselves, as opposed to giving them to their adversaries in Ramallah.
So is it probable, or can you say 100%, because Hamas is, a lot of money is funneled to Hamas from Iran, that technically Iran is in this region?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is probably the most important strategic point that's come up in our conversation, Rod. Look, we know from our chief of staff, who gave a lecture at the National Institute the Institute for National Security Affairs in Tel Aviv, that Iran has pumped some $100 million into the Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is a branch of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, in the last 12 months. And we know that from Iran, the Iranian regime's point of view, Gaza is a southern front for Iran to attack Israel, while Syria and Lebanon are northern fronts to attack Israel. Now, Gaza has become more important to the Iranian regime, especially since its ignominious defeat the other day by a sortie of 50 targets that were destroyed, the Iranian targets inside Syria, destroyed by the Israeli Air Force. And this shocked the Iranian regime, the IRGC, and the Quds Force, the elite force of the Iranian external intelligence and security services, all the way down to its britches. They could never imagine that Israel had such exact capabilities in the area of intelligence, in the area of Air Force execution. So Iran is now reassessing its strategy towards Israel, and Gaza becomes more and more popular as the Iranian political warfare strategy, because the press, the media becomes its weapon, because public opinion becomes its weapon, because the United Nations and international institutions become weaponized against Israel. And their hope is that Israel then could become isolated in the international community, and Israel's legitimacy could be lowered to equal that of Hamas, while Iran can take great leaps on the northern side in Syria and Lebanon to rebuild, as well as in Tehran continue with their nuclear program.
So in reality, and I hate to keep dominating the questions because we have a lot of things that we want to ask you, but in reality, this is the example of what we call asymmetrical hybrid warfare. It's not total war, but it's a way of shifting conflict to keep your enemy occupied, correct?
Yes, it is. It is very much an expression of what counterterrorism professionals call hybrid warfare. Hybrid warfare means, according to some, the execution of conventional warfare mixed with classical small cell terrorism, usually by what is perceived as a much weaker side opposite a much stronger side, which of course Israel would be. But I think we're facing another type of hybrid warfare that I would call, Rod and Jerry, I would call it Hydra warfare, named after the old Greek mythological monster that has between 6 and 9 heads. And in according to the Greek mythological example, when Hercules would behead the Hydra would then grow additional heads. It would metastasize
That
and grow
good.
Additional heads.
That's actually
what we're
really good. Yeah.
In Hamas.
Yeah.
That's what we're facing with Hamas and Hezbollah. We're facing a very complex terror organization that behaves as a conventional army. It behaves as a terror organization. It engages in political and ideological warfare, mass protests, deception, manipulation, very much reminiscent of what the Soviet Union and the PLO have done in the past, and also Iran. Iran has become the patron of this type of hybrid, as you call it, hybrid or Hydra warfare, and it essentially creates orchestrated chaos.
Right.
In among free states and free peoples, because they don't know which direction to turn, because this Hydra, in this case Hamas, can behave in legitimate and illegitimate ways simultaneously.
Dan, speaking about Iran, the Israeli Air Force sortie that you talked about probably put Iran on its back foot, so to speak, in terms of the ferocity of the response for the 20-rocket barrage. But there's also something else emerging. Bibi had, just before that event, gone on to Moscow for a meeting with Putin during what is called Victory Day. And undoubtedly, there were discussions there. And even now, as we speak, Russia is giving a message over to Iran. They can't expect, essentially, any significant developments towards, quote, doing the nuclear deal without the U.S. What is your assessment of that?
Well, I think it's correct. In fact, my understanding is that the Russians are basically telling the Iranians that in this next round of negotiations, which everyone expects will take place, the Iranian regime is going to have to concede something that they haven't conceded before. There are two major cavernous holes in the JCPOA from Israel's point of view and from the point of view of the United States. And that is, number one, what they call the sunset clause, meaning the clause that holds how long the Iranian regime would have to hold back in enriching uranium to a very low degree. They would have to continue at the 3.5% threshold, so they wouldn't be able to break out to the 90% military grade uranium. The no less important, and this has not been discussed frequently enough, is their capability right now. Even though the deal has now, of course, been frozen, but under the deal, they were not limited. The regime was not limited in their ability to develop ballistic missiles, to do R&D on faster centrifuges, and perhaps most important, their malign behavior was not checked in any way across the region. And you, Jerry and Rob, you probably know that Iran, for the last 25 or 30 years, has been slowly but surely extending its octopus tentacles throughout the Middle East region.
Absolutely.
Today we can say confidently they're subverting every country in the region.
Yes, absolutely. Dan, we're going to have to come back after the break and pick this up. Very good point, and it's something I'd like to continue on. You listen to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hey, everyone. This is Ari Folder. I want to invite you all to join me on my weekly show, Bulletproof, here on Israel News Talk Radio. It's the weekly show we discover, expose, and destroy all anti-Israel propaganda that's spread throughout the universe, both from outside Israel, including also inside Israel. Join me every week, and let's defend Israel together.
Bulletproof. Live every Sunday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern time.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix. Here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And you are back to The Matrix, or Beyond The Matrix. You're listening to The Matrix, Beyond The Matrix with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon, and a very special guest, Dan. And he is, Dan Diker is in Israel, as a matter of fact, taking time in his late evening to chat with us today. We really appreciate you coming on. Right before the break, we were having a very important discussion, and I'm going to let Jerry go ahead and introduce this part, what we want to talk about.
Dan, we were talking about the significance that a lot of people are unaware of between the empowerment in the last Lebanon election with Hezbollah and its so-called allies and Hamas. I wonder if you would enlighten our listeners about the significance of that development.
Well, you know, Jerry, Rod, we've been witnessing in the West an increasing legitimacy, mainstreaming, if you will, both of Hamas and Hezbollah. And that is particularly worrying because it's their international legitimacy that essentially creates a parity of legitimacy with countries like Israel and even Europe and the United States. You take the Iranian regime, for example. The fact that the permanent five members of the Security Council plus Germany essentially came to a diplomatic agreement, the JCPOA, the nuke deal with Iran, essentially caused its, allowed its re-entry into the international community. And as we speak, there are billions of dollars of commerce that are being done between Europe and Iran. Hezbollah and Hamas, the same thing. Hezbollah, in the recent May 6 election, won more, just about a little bit more than half the seats in the 128-seat parliament in Lebanon. And that means they have a blocking third to any legislation that the Hezbollah doesn't like, Hezbollah and Amal and their loyalists and their affiliates. So Hezbollah becomes a mainstream internationally legitimized government player in Lebanese politics. Now, that's a problem because Hezbollah is a proxy of the Iranian regime, as we know. So essentially, the government of Lebanon is being controlled, or certainly is being blocked from being independent, by a puppet of the Iranian regime. And similarly in Hamas, you have in Hamas in recent years, a mainstream of Hamas being honored guests in South Africa, honored guests in Russia, honored guests in even in some, in a couple of European countries, I think in Bulgaria. And in fact, Tony Blair, former prime minister, 10-year prime minister of the United Kingdom, invited Khaled Mashal to meet with him in London, set up a Muslim Brotherhood operative by the name of Dr. Azam Tamimi in London. And it was canceled at the last minute because Hamas didn't want to meet with Blair under the conditions upon which they were going to meet. But what you do see is a growing legitimacy of these organizations. Since the Gilad Shalit capture, the young Israeli soldier that was captured in 2005 and released in 2010, Hamas was in the driver's seat on that. Hamas is in the driver's seat as the de facto governor of the Islamic Emirate called Gaza today. So Hamas is an international player, whether we like it or not. And that creates a big problem, certainly for Israel, because Israel is considered on the same sort of moral, ethical, government legitimate level as Hamas. Finally, we know that even former President Barack Obama, the United States, actually volunteered to personally mediate, right, in the 2014 war against Hamas between Israel and the Hamas government. Now, if that isn't the mother of legitimacy, right, I don't know what is.
What's interesting to me, Dan, is that both Hezbollah and Hamas are U.S. designated terrorist organizations.
And they are in Europe as well.
Correct.
Europe makes a Europe differentiates between the political and the military wings of Hezbollah, but they put the political wing. They outlawed the political wing, I think, just in 2013.
Well, one of the things.
I'm sorry, the military wing in 2013.
One of the things that Jerry Gordon and I have tried to do in the show is to really put a light on issues that need to be really exposed and brought to the forefront. What are you suggesting that needs to take place so that we keep a light on these organizations as terrorist organizations and keep it up front in people's mind to understand the danger that we're sort of playing with their legitimacy in the whole process? What would be your advice to people that are listening when they hear this and think that, well, maybe there is moral equivalence between Israel and Hamas?
If people listening to this program want to encourage Al-Qaeda and ISIS to execute terror attacks against the United States they will then continue or will begin to support Hamas and Hezbollah. Because if you want to prevent terrorism in the United States, one has to take a principled, unconditional position against Hezbollah and Hamas that are radical Islamic terror organizations, Hezbollah radical Shiite, Hamas radical Sunni, coming out of the Muslim Brotherhood. They have the same goals as ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And unfortunately, Rod, in the free world, we in the free world look for reasons. Mm-hmm. We look for rationalization in order to justify unjustifiable behavior, such as Hamas sending young teens to their death in trying to penetrate the Israeli border in southern, central, and northern Gaza. And therefore, when they see ISIS and Al-Qaeda murdering tens of Frenchmen for no apparent reason, people tend to differentiate between terror and terror.
Right.
And terror cannot be differentiated. If you want to preserve and secure the United States, you have to take a principled stand against terror of all kinds. Especially, there is no good or bad Islamic or radical Arab terrorism. It's all one. It's all one bucket.
I tell you, since we've been seeing the rise of terrorism in Europe and in France, this is an ugly thing that most modern, what we consider postmodern societies, are really having to reconsider their opinion of humanity. I think the problem is a postmodern sort of progressive society says, well, in general, people are decent people, and they can't really be that bad. Maybe they just have some grievances we don't understand. But there is a huge difference between having a grievance and wanting to see a complete nationality or an ethnic group of people disappear off the face of the earth, correct?
Well, I think so. I think what we're seeing, I think, in a lot of people in our young generation are people for whom there is no truth. There's no absolute truth. Everything is a question of feeling. I feel that way. It's identity politics at its very best. I feel this way, therefore that's true. You feel that way, that's true for you. And that's what we're seeing today on many university campuses. Mm-hmm. It's something called intersectionality.
It means,
you know that expression, right?
Yes.
I mean, intersectionality is, if you want to be a humanistic, moral human being, you have to be on the front lines of Black Lives Matter, Gay Lives Matter, LGBTQ. You have to be an Israel hater. You have to sign up for every so-called aggrieved minority or self-styled minority group in order to be a moral player. You cannot choose your issue anymore. It's all or nothing.
Right.
According to that so-called universalistic ideology.
And that
creates a real problem.
It does. What gets me, Dan, is you would figure our higher institution of higher learning would understand history, that tribalism always divides and destroys communities and nations. They never really do anything to preserve unities and nations. And we're not saying that people shouldn't have their distinct cultural identities, whatever they like, but there seems to be a wedge being driven in society. And I would say not only in America, but in Europe and Israel, in which you want to sort of put people in different classes. You have the Haredi, you have the secular, you have the liberal, the progressive, you have all these different classes. And then now you break it down to even lower. You have, you know, the Black Lives Matter, the gay and lesbian community. Everybody has their own little place to go. And there's a lot of confusion. And I really do believe that as a society, or as a sound, sort of a sound group of people on the air speaking, is that we got to somehow speak some common sense. What do you think the answer would be, and what needs to be really addressed?
Well, that's a $64,000 question, isn't it? I think it comes down. It really comes down to a worldview that I think the founding fathers of the United States discussed very well in the Federalist Papers and the philosophers of, you know, whether it's John Burke or Immanuel Kant. Mm-hmm. These great French and British and American philosophers talked about some of the great moral questions of our times. And I think that, you know, I think, frankly, that our Christian tradition and Jewish and the Jewish tradition also speak about those great moral dilemmas. And I think in a way that we all have to, on some level, in our own ways, come back to those traditional struggle with those traditional traditional questions, in a way that makes sense for us.
Yeah, very,
and
very
by
well
respecting
said.
The other, by respecting our, I think we need to respect ourselves, not in spite of our differences, but because we're all different.
Right. No, absolutely.
Without going to the ends of the, you know, to the ends of the earth, and considering that, you know, you can be Hezbollah and still be moral, and you can be Hamas and still right. and still be a legitimate player. We have to get back to the original understanding of right and wrong and good and bad. And I think that we have our in our Judeo-Christian tradition to do that.
This concludes the program. Dan Diker, I really appreciate you coming on to the program. And hopefully everyone will become a lover of truth and the lover of what is right in the world and society. Thank you so much for joining us on Beyond the Matrix. Hope it's not the last time. And we'll see you guys later on. Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.